Thank you for coming today. My name is Scott Erickson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Agriculture and Food. I've got a few things to read just for housekeeping items and to make sure everybody understands what's happening today. But to start, just so everybody's oriented, restrooms are out the door.
There we go.
Got better?
Yep. Thank you.
I didn't want to yell. So restrooms are out the door, to the left towards the sliding doors, and then to the left again if you need those. So we have some rules, housekeeping items that we'll go through. It's going to take a minute. I'll read them so we get through them quickly. The administrative rules process that the state has is a public process. So everyone is aware the public meeting today is being recorded. Today's meeting is being held solely to provide to receive commentary on rules the department will be drafting to implement four bills that were passed by the legislature: the Medical Cannabis Policy Act, Cannabis Cultivation Amendments, Cannabidiol Product Act, and the Cultivation of Industrial Hemp Act. There will be three meetings today. First, this one is Industrial Hemp from 8:30 to 10. The second, from 11 to 12:30, will focus solely on cannabidiol products, including CBD. And the third, from 1:30 to 3:30, will focus on medical marijuana, the right to try for terminally ill patients, as set forth in HB 195. This is not a forum to provide commentary on the bills that were passed by the legislature and what should have or should not have been included in those bills, or the initiative that is expected to be on the ballot in November. Comments regarding the scope of those policies should be directed to your legislator or others. The department does not have the authority to create rules that do any more than is specified in statute. Therefore, each session will be limited solely to the stated topic for that session. So we're going to do some introductions of people that are here so you know who is listening will be the ones that are helping to draft those rules. So Weston, we'll start.
I'm Weston Judd. I'm the state chemist with the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. My role in this process will be laboratory testing.
I'm Robert Hogard. I'm the director of plant industry and conservation at the Utah Department of Agriculture and Food. My responsibility will be, my inspectors will be the people who will be going out and doing these inspections.
I'm Melissa Yor. I'm a senior policy analyst at the Department of Agriculture. I will be drafting the rules and helping with enforcement.
Nicole Hanna from the Utah State Attorney General's Office. I'm counsel for the Department of Agriculture.
So individuals who have already signed up with the department will be allowed to speak for a maximum of 5 minutes. I have a list here with 17 people that have signed up. When that is completed, do we have others that want to participate as well?
Yes.
Raise your hand. Right. So there are a handful. We should have time for that after as well, so that shouldn't be a problem. Those on the panel from the Department of Agriculture and Food will not be taking questions or commenting on policy, but may ask for clarifying questions, or may ask for clarification from the individual if needed. The most helpful pieces of information that you can provide today are aspects that you would like included in the administrative rules or items that you would like excluded from the administrative rules. These rules will dictate how the program functions. If you'd like to submit your comments from today in writing or other comments about these items, please email those comments to agriculture@utah.gov. This is the information gathering part of the administrative rules process. After the proposed rule is drafted, there will be other opportunities for you to speak specifically to the drafted rules. We will have multiple public hearings on the draft rules, and you will be able to comment in writing. Also, please be respectful of others in attendance today. Any individual engaging in offensive language or gestures, inappropriate or threatening behavior who fails to yield their speaking time or attempts to interrupt another speaking time may be asked to leave the meeting. Further, although counsel for the state of Utah Department of Agriculture and Food is present, this meeting is not intended to provide legal advice regarding the newly enacted legislation. Presence of the Attorney General's Office, Department of Agriculture and Food, or any state entity present is not considered an endorsement of any policy or position stated by any member of this panel providing the individual in attendance, there's no attorney-client relationship between Ms. Hannah and any person appearing in a public meeting. No statements by her or any other member of this panel should be taken as legal advice or counsel or a statement that is an official position of the Attorney General's office, nor should it substitute for obtaining competent legal advice from an attorney. Notwithstanding the above, please be reminded that under federal law, possessing, using, distributing, and or selling marijuana is a federal crime. Nothing in this meeting is intended to provide any guidance or assistance in violating federal law or to provide guidance or assistance in complying with federal law. Similarly, compliance with state law does not confer immunity from enforcement of federal law or federal enforcement practices. Please note that we are not advising you regarding the federal, state, or local tax or any regulatory consequences engaging in any business in this industry. To make sure we get to everyone who wants to speak, I'll provide a batting order, so to speak, of who's up next. Please be prepared at the mic so that we can move forward with the public hearing and get a chance to hear from everyone. We'll start with Steve Bevan on this side, and Danella Lucero over here, and Andrew Rigby will be up on my right, following Steve Bevan. Please make sure you sign your name on there, so if we have questions or need additional information, we can contact you. And when you speak, because this is recorded so we can get that information, please state your name and what organization, if any, you represent.
Scott, I believe that Ms. Lucero canceled all that.
No, is that true? I canceled all the
Okay, very good. Thank you.
So, Mr. Bevan, why don't you go first?
Hi there. My name is Steve Bevan. I'm from Gincana Global in Kentucky, Winchester, Kentucky, and I'm here representing the United States Hemp Roundtable. We are a coalition of industry participants, hemp cultivators, hemp processors, hemp ingredient manufacturers, distributors, formulators, the whole piece. I am secretary of the board, and our group came together and coalesced over the past couple years because we felt the need to perform a couple important hemp industry functions. One, to help provide education, and so we're grateful to be here. Thank you for having us. Secondly, we think it's very important that the hemp industry derive some standards. They don't exist right now, so there are many questions. What is hemp? What are hemp products? What is the CBD stuff that people are talking about? And so we are very much about establishing for the industry what those standards might be like so that we can have elevated discussions on an in-state basis and on a national and international basis. So my company has been growing hemp. This will be our fifth outdoor season in the state of Kentucky. We went to Kentucky several years ago because we decided that there was a lot of clarity in the state about exactly what hemp was. The rules weren't always that clear as things initiated in Kentucky, but we developed a very close working relationship with the Kentucky Department of Agriculture. They have been phenomenal. They have been leaders in hemp regulation. Their website contains a cornucopia of what to do, policies, how to do, why, et cetera, et cetera. And we've been very fortunate to have been there. So we started growing outdoors in Kentucky in 2014, very small. We progressed to working with more and greater farmers around the state, a lot of former tobacco farmers, so there's been great need for a replacement crop in Kentucky. We progressed to purchasing a former I don't know if I should say the name, but a major tobacco company had a research facility. They evacuated it, so we purchased it. We have repurposed it, and we do most of our harvest processing. We call it crop processing and product extraction, refinement, formulation. We're very happy that at its heyday, this tobacco research facility might have employed 30 people. We've repurposed it and now employ over 50 people repurposing tobacco assets for the hemp industry. So at Gincana, we've been fortunate to have had a role in the industry where we can have conversations about where things are going in the future, because it hasn't always been obvious. It's been confusing what things like cannabidiol are, how CBD is valued, how it's moved around the country. Right now, most of the economic impact in the hemp market comes from CBD because it's very highly valued. We believe at GenCanada the price will go down over the next few years as thousands of acres get planted, and that's why we think it's very important for the industry to quantify and qualify exactly what production standards are, what this is. So at its very basic, hemp is divided into two categories, food and fiber. We believe strongly that CBD production is a subset of the food. That means that if you're producing food, like any other agricultural commodity, you've got to perform to certain standards. You've got to have QA/QC steps all along the way. We're very happy that at our facility, we're working with GMP standards. We've got food safety certifications, we're FDA accredited, we've been kosher accredited just over the past couple of months. And we believe that the future of this agricultural commoditization of industrial hemp, CBD, as hemp-derived food is all about proper certification, proper education, and understanding what this means. So we're happy that we have 50 employees. We work with 10 farmers, and we're just so pleased that we think we can count our economic impact at greater than $40 million just in the local Kentucky area. So we hope that Utah, we hope that the disposition of the Ag Department in Utah is such that you welcome the work of farmers, the learning of farmers, that you empower and encourage them to farm, because your farmers will lead the educational process, and hand in hand with processors, we hope that we can see a great development of the Utah hemp industry. Okay. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Danielle Lucero. I'm one of the members of Hemp Supply Marketing Garden Village. We believe that the cultivation of hemp is something that enormously benefits the Utah economy. These are the kind of in the thousands. It's kind of part of the survival variable. With us, we utilize hemp seed oil, which is a perfect balance of 3-to-1 ratio of omega-6 and omega-3 fatty acids. It has amazing skincare properties. It improves skin texture, softens fine lines, and deeply moisturizes the skin naturally without parabens, preservatives, or synthetics. It can be used to make clothing. Patagonia currently has a line of hemp clothing. In 1941, Henry Ford built a car out of hemp plastic, and it ran on hemp fuel. Our country has been using hemp products for centuries. Why is it being persecuted at this time? CBD oil is a non-psychoactive part of hemp. It is a natural healing oil from this planet. It does not show up in a drug test, and it does not get you high. But due to strict farming regulations, hemp oil and hemp products are in short supply, and it's not cost-effective. What if Utah became leaders in hemp cultivation? Using the money that we could generate in our economy to put back into our communities, in schools, veteran affairs, and higher education. In 2014, President Obama signed a bill legalizing industrial hemp. A big part of this bill was that grow sites had to be registered for the state. On Thursday, April 12th, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell filed the Hemp Farming Act 2018, which would completely remove hemp as a whole from the list of controlled substances that provide support for hemp farmers. It's really not that difficult. Buy a license, we pay our license fees and taxes, grow hemp, and make a living. Everyone gets their money one way or another. I hope you can see the separation of hemp from marijuana and think about your relationship and opinions with hemp. Our country is waking up from the prohibition on hemp, and it will soon be over. This is the time to get on this train. This is an opportunity for Utah to be leaders. I would hope that you can think about the people and the environment in mind when you make your decisions.
Thank you. So we have Mr. Rigby on this side, and then Paul Weeds. Is Paul here? Okay, we may come back to him. Diane Bingham. Okay. Christine Sinquist. Christine. Connor Gomez. Connor Boyack on this side next. So Paul, and then Connor, and then after Paul, Lori Odell.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having us this morning. My name is Drew Rigby. I am a founder and partner of a business by the name of Agronomic Holdings. My partners and I, we own and operate over 25 THC farms in California. We have a 185,000 square foot processing facility in Modesto where we do indoor grow, nursery, indoor cultivation, processing, extraction, white labeling services, packaging, distribution, you name it. We also have a 260-acre industrial hemp grow in Nevada, and we are very excited to possibly be working here in Utah next year. We're all Utah natives, and we've been very excited and hoping that this has been coming, so it's all good news to us. But there are a few things that I'll mention, some things that we think from our point of view, since we are experienced owners and operators, a few things that are very important. I do agree with the gentleman that spoke to before me. Standards are everything, and clarity is very important. There is a lack of standard industry-wide. It's very fragmented and very different from state to state. I would hope that Utah understands the opportunity that we have before us to really become an epicenter of industrial hemp in the nation. Kentucky and Colorado are obviously out there, but there's no reason why we can't catch up with them and literally make this the epicenter of industrial hemp. It's kind of in our roots, and with the nutraceuticals and everything else that we have going on here, it's par for course. A few things that I would hope that you guys would consider and take a lot of time to think about is a certified seed program. Minimum lab testing requirements, and I would hope that the lab testing would be a third-party testing facility that has no financial interest in either the... Go ahead.
Just slow down.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I know I only have 5 minutes, so I'm trying to roll. A certified seed program, minimum lab testing requirements, and this is something that's important to us because in California, cultivators, anyone who touches a cannabis plant cannot have any kind of financial interest in laboratory and testing facilities, and that's to avoid a conflict of interest, obviously, between the two parties. And so that's important. I think that's something that you guys should look into. For Utah, another thing would be minimum acreage to qualify for a permit. Obviously, I don't know that we want people growing hemp in their backyards, and there should probably be some kind of minimum acreage requirement or some kind of a ratio. If you have X amount of acres, you can grow X amount of acreage of industrial hemp, but obviously not capping it in any way. And then the last thing that I'll mention is just taxes. Taxes are a really big deal in this industry, and they're very burdensome in other states. And obviously, CBD or industrial hemp is not psychoactive, so it's not as regulated as THC is that require a lot of taxes to regulate and everything like that to support the systems. But I would hope that Utah is very smart in their approach to taxing this product, because if the taxes are burdensome, the business will go elsewhere, and I really don't want to see that. I don't want to have to keep traveling from state to state. I'd love to work in Utah. So those are my thoughts, and I know you guys will do a good job with this, and I'm really excited. My partners and I are really excited to see where this goes, so thank you for the time.
Hi guys, Connor Boyatt with the Righteous Institute. This is kind of interesting to be here. A lot of people know that we're one of the groups behind the medical cannabis ballot initiative, but we actually, our interest on this issue started with industrial hemp. So 4 or 5 years ago, we had a meeting with a bunch of people who wanted to grow, people who were looking at growing in other states. We started getting things off the ground to begin to change the law on industrial hemp. And that's when CNN's documentary about Charlotte Figge, the girl with seizures, kind of blew up. Everyone had an awakening to the impacts that CBD can have and medical cannabis more broadly. So we shifted our attention to the medical need that was at the time perceived by us to be more important than a commercial need and interest to grow. So now that the medical cannabis thing is kind of on its own path, very pleased to see this bill. I wanted to bring up specifically a couple of things just that's going to be on our radar going forward that we're going to be paying attention to. So I'm looking at the bill, House Bill 302 that created this, and in lines 55 to 57 specifically, it's giving the department authority to allow for at least one licensee, right? So this is kind of open-ended thing. So our interest is making sure that this isn't one or two, right? That there's opportunity, I think there's a lot of interest here. And so making sure that the rulemaking does not preclude the opportunity where this is more a research-oriented thing, like let's test this, let's figure out what's working. If we limit it to 5 licensees, for example, there may be that 6th guy who's excluded whose research might actually have had a lot more utility. So making sure that we're not unnecessarily limiting the amount of people who can participate. Dovetailing off of that, I'll respond maybe briefly to the previous commenter. We'd be very concerned with any limits on acreage from a protectionist standpoint, trying to exclude people who want perhaps a smaller growth. Perhaps you have a medical facility or an academic facility who just wants a single tiny plot in the backyard to do some very limited research. They're not doing it for this broader commercial interest where they need volume. And so limiting it to acreage, while that might be of interest to some larger players to exclude some of the competition, we'd be concerned about that because a lot of people might just want to do smaller plots for strictly research type purposes. And then the other thing we're going to be looking at is in line 77 and 78, where Representative Dodd gave the department basically carte blanche authority to establish requirements for a license. Melissa remembers well, we tangled in the past on the Representative Forrest bill, and that the department in rulemaking was requiring some things to the bottom. This, of course, gives broad authority to say what are those requirements going to be. We didn't oppose this. We figured, look, this is kind of a very broad step forward for the legislature to be willing to do this. We were willing to just sit back and say, we have good faith now, and talking specifically with Melissa and a little bit with Scott during the session. We don't think there's any bad faith here. I think there's interest in saying this is a good opportunity, let's move forward. And specifically on that note, our last point would just be urgency. And Melissa and I talked about this specifically. We have a potential growing season ahead of us that we can get through rulemaking and not have any problems that would drag that out. I think there's a lot of interest in this room, and from some of our supporters who couldn't be here, who do want to get permits and who do want to grow, to be able to have some chance to play in that sandbox this year rather than wait another year. So just want to make you aware that those are some of the things that are going to be on our radar going forward, and we'll keep chatting along the way. Appreciate the opportunity to make comment. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Did you say Laurie O'Dell? Okay. So, Laurie O'Dell with Center of Healing. I am a distributor for Charlotte's Web, based out of Colorado. And just wanted to reiterate what a lot of everyone else has mentioned here, the importance of good manufacturing practices, making sure that there are quality standards that companies that want to be selling or distributing in the state of Utah, that there is some kind of a standardization that everyone will need to follow. So, you know, the products are grown outside. It's very important that we make sure that the pesticides or herbicides that people are using are organic and safe for consumption. Hemp is a natural sponge, and so it is going to pull up everything from the soil, not only the soil, but the environment around it. So any of the toxins, heavy metals, you know, any of those things that might be in the soil will then be absorbed into the plant and then would be in the final product in which people would be consuming. So again, just making sure that the quality standards are there so that a safe product is being put on the shelves. I do agree that, you know, making sure that every product is registered with the state of Utah. Also, I think that full transparency is necessary, so making sure that there are batch reports available, maybe in the form of like a QR code or even just, you know, some way on the packaging that tells the consumer how they can get the results for that batch of oil that they are consuming. Again, just making sure that there is full transparency so that they understand what they're putting into their bodies and that they know that quality testing has been done on every product. And then in those same lines, making sure that the products remain consistent from batch to batch. There are people that will be taking the product that it works very well for them. They rely on a certain quality and purity in the product. So it would be imperative to make sure that there is a test range or a quality range, knowing that there are environmental factors that can't be controlled, but making sure that every product is as consistent as possible, so that someone that's taking it last month, when they take it again this month, they can be assured that it's going to work on their bodies the same way. Thank you.
Thank you. David Morgan? Okay. Marion Sweeney? Okay. Did we get Anne Rigby or Pauline's? No, sorry. Pauline's or Diane Dingham? Go ahead.
Hi there. My name is Miriam Sweeney. I am a private citizen with interest in investing in the industrial hemp industry here in Utah. And I'll cut right to the chase of my friends and my recommendations. So we believe for Utah to take full advantage of the recent passage of the industrial hemp bill, that we need to make sure the regulations are favorable to the unique economic and farming dynamics of Utah. And so we see that happening through six basic steps. First of all, we are in support of the regulation of the industrial hemp bill to have, or industrial hemp to have less than one or up to 1% THC on a dry weight basis. But additionally, we believe it should be flexible enough to allow Utah to be competitive with other states if the national regulation or other states allow for flexibility to raise slightly their THC threshold allowance. Number two, we should allow the regulation around the testing of the threshold THC, recognizing that things like genetics and environment can significantly affect the same farmer's crop of hemp and its THC level. We believe farmers should be allowed to remediate the THC values within their own crops when they are tested at a THC level above the allowed amount, as opposed to going through and destroying the entire crop. Number three, we'd encourage the state to allow for the state organic certification of hemp. Number four, we'd encourage Utah to have a seed certification program that takes no longer than 2 years, just like Colorado's. Number five, we'd strongly encourage the department to look at ways to ease water right restrictions for hemp farmers. And finally, hemp cultivators and processors should not be required to be separate. In other words, people should be able to both cultivate and process industrial hemp. Thanks for your time. We're really excited about this.
Sorry, that was not the last one. So
no, I do my comments for free.
That has signed up. Who else would like to make comments on industrial hemp? Okay, why don't you come up one on this side and then this other side. Whoever would like to come up will take comments. We have the room until the Utah shakeout happens in an hour. So you may get to go through a big earthquake today too. We're here for a moment. So one on this side and we'll be there.
Good morning, I'm Cindy Mon. I am standing before you today because I hear a lot of people talk about the medicine of the plant. However, there is so much more to this plant that Utah really needs to take advantage of. This can create biofuels, this can create lumber, paper, fabric, stains, paints. I mean, there's 50,000 uses. You should not restrict this. You should take full advantage of this economic opportunity for Utah. In fact, you guys should just take advantage of all the cannabis plants. This medicine has been in use for over a millennia. I am actually a tribal member, and this has been used by indigenous people all over the world for centuries. So kind of makes things a little awkward when state laws against the science. So we'd like you to take those things into account. Right now, the hemp battery or superconductor batteries that they have been testing, that type of things, they're working up to 200 degrees, where other ones have to work in cryogenic conditions. That's pretty big, guys. That's renewable energy. And we need to face this. We live in Utah. Everybody love the inversion around here? You know? Hemp burns 75% cleaner. How would that air be if it was 75% cleaner? How would your engine be if it was 75% cleaner? There's a lot to do. And restriction should not be what you should be focusing on. You should look at every use and allow our farmers to carry us just like they did in the 1800s. Hemp used to be one of those currencies we used to use. So we should revisit the whole Hemp for Victory campaign, but I'm just going to say Cannabis for Victory. Thanks for letting me speak.
My name is David Shank. I'm from Morgan, Utah. I'm an extraction plant in Colorado, deals with industrial hemp. I would be thrilled to see farmers in Utah be able to grow industrial hemp. And I have a different view on who should be allowed and who shouldn't be allowed, because I had a farmer bring in an acre's worth of industrial hemp this week into our facility, and it was valued at roughly $75,000. And so if you do it properly, there is a lot of economic upside to an individual farmer, and it doesn't have to be on a large scale basis to be very profitable for them. We are inspected by the health department, we're inspected by the Department of Ag. I've been in the supplement industry for 20 years in Utah. I had to go out of state to be involved with CBD. I think it's very important that we realize that there are many countries that are ahead of us, and I don't know why we don't recognize it, but Israel has done 30 years of study, so when we say we don't know what the results are, what it'll be, that's simply not true. We'll accept Israel's studies on everything else, but for some reason when it comes to anything with the word cannabis attached to it, we don't think it's, we question it. But I appreciate what you're doing, and I would hope you would regulate it very similar to the way supplements are regulated here in Utah under GMP manufacturing. That's the way we are doing it in Colorado, and frankly, I'm tired of driving Colorado every week, so thank you.
My name is John Cooper. I'm a citizen in Utah. I used to run a processing and manufacturing facility in the Bay Area. So as far as cultivation goes, I would encourage you guys, like has been said before, to get this running as quickly as possible, because these plants take 3 to 4 months from seed to harvest. And we have a great growing season ahead of us. I would also encourage you guys to not limit the number of licenses, so that people can grow indoors, people can grow outdoors, and a private farmer and a private company can and will always make better product than a government organization ever will. So I would encourage you guys to try and get as many people as possible that are interested in this, give them the opportunity to benefit from this bill economically themselves. Thank you.
My name is Hunter Wixom. I'm a private citizen. Just 3 points I'd like to make. One, in regards to the spread of seed due to environmental factors such as water or wind. It's generally regulated in other states. If it's too tightly regulated in terms of the seeds cannot spread because of wind a certain distance, and if there's a windy area and it's too harsh of a regulation, then farmers are forced to move to indoor farming, which is less economical and harder to start. So from an economic standpoint, there needs to be regulation in terms of the contamination or spread of seed from a specific acre, but it can't be too harsh on the farmers. Number two, I'd recommend that Utah focus and create an incentive system for research in the hemp and industrial hemp space, whether that be through tax benefits or through specific government grants. And then third, commenting on previous remarks about the minimum acreage requirement. From a government standpoint, regulating, I would recommend that a minimum acreage be implemented for commercial farming. However, for academic and research purposes, minimum acreage would not be required.
Hi,
Any others?
Hi, my name is Tasha Nelson. I'm with Good Earth Natural Foods. And we were really excited and had a meeting with you earlier that was wonderful. We're excited about the fact that we're putting a bunch of this into writing and that there's regulations. There's a number of products that are hemp-based products that our stores carry and that many other health food stores carry. And it'll be exciting and interesting to know how it'll affect them. My plea is that we don't increase the cost of health food products anymore, including hemp seed and 369 hemp oils and a bunch of the other nutritional supplements and things. And if there are registration costs that are going to be incurred upon our manufacturers, it'd be wonderful if it doesn't raise the cost considerably to our customers in the end. I'm a strong believer that subsidies in the government shouldn't be helping us get more junk food, and that taxation and fees on the health food industry should be minimal so that we can invest in our health and have it made easy for the common Utahn and American to be healthy. And so I'm excited that that you are regulating this. Some other key things that I heard already today that I just wanted to reiterate, Kentucky's done a great job of their policy, and it might be something to look at and to see the things in their policy that you like and would like to use in our Utah policy as a guideline. And also some of the regulations for farming, anything that would help us to bring that here to Utah. I would also lastly like to emphasize GMP standards. Good Earth Natural Foods and many of the other natural health food stores tend to only bring in products that are GMP or non-GMO or organic. And the reason for that is it's a way for we as the people to express our liberty and at the same time provide a level of quality and product. So these companies that we've already brought in have already stepped up to the plate. And without any regulation thus far, they have said, we're going to measure up to a higher standard. And GMP is a fantastic thing to look at in writing policy to raise the bar for the other ones who are going to step up to the plate. Keeping in mind also what Lori said from Charlotte's Web, that it is very important that hemp be regulated on a more organic level. And maybe we can't or should not enforce and force everybody to be organic, but to advise them with their own liberty to step up to the plate and get that organic label. Any of the glyphosates and the other chemicals that are out there in fertilizers are causing major issues with a lot of our customers. And I get to, my job is to teach them how to redo their diet because they're becoming allergic to everything. And so if hemp would step up to the plate, and if you look at the GMP standards, I would highly recommend that. And just to let you know, if all those people who have already used our liberty to step up to the plate and produce and provide product on a higher level, it is a great way to do it. So and any other questions that you guys have, we are available with research and all that you need during this policymaking process. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Rick Manson, just a normal citizen. I just wanted to share a story with you guys, what I went through. 4 years ago, I turned 60, and I woke up in stiff, I had just stiff joints, sore muscles, I could hardly move. I was freaked out. I ran all kinds of tests. We ruled out cancer, diabetes, thyroid, prostate, and I mean, we ran all kinds of tests. We couldn't figure out what it was. We ended up putting me on Celebrex for the stiff pain joints stuff. It worked really well, got me moving, got me working. Another part of my symptoms was as I was getting nerve pain. My nerve pain was experiencing fireballs that were just shooting out of my toes. It's horrendous. If you haven't ever experienced nerve pain, it can't be described to you, but it was just a horrendous time in my life. I would be laying in bed, and in certain moments, that pain would shoot through my toes, and it would wake me from a sound sleep. So we ended up with me on gabapentin for that. So now I'm on gabapentin and Celebrex for about 2 years. It was working really well for me. I was glad to have it. But the problem is I started experiencing side effects. The hair on my chest and my arms started feeling like fishing line. And I knew just from the stuff I was reading that it was affecting my liver and my kidneys. And it had me in a quandary of what do I do now? I'm just going to have to live with the idea that, yeah, eventually I'm going to die of kidney failure, but I can't get off this stuff because without this stuff, without the gabapentin and the Celebrex, I couldn't wring a wash rag. I'd have to hand the wash rag to my wife and she could wring it for me. Then a friend of mine told me about CBD. He said, have you ever thought about trying it? I didn't know what it was. That's just a little less than a year ago. And he explained to me some of the people that he had suggested it for that took it for other conditions. And I told him about mine, and he said that I asked him how long it would take before I experience a change. He said, you take this stuff, you'll see a change in about 20 minutes. And I said, dude, I don't think you understand what I'm going through. So I did what he said. I took it that one night. I said, okay, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. So the first night that I took it, my symptoms disappeared. It was a little over a year ago. I still have the Celebrex and gabapentin in my vitamin box, and they're still sitting there. I have two bottles of each prescription drug still sitting in my medicine cabinet, untouched, in over a year. So when I sit and I watch people like yourselves, well-intended, I'm sure you're well-intended, you really have no business telling me what I can or cannot put into my body. I'd hate to think what my life would be like without Celebrex, without CBD. I don't want to have to be subject to having to take prescription medications because there's some all-knowing entity that can tell me what I can or cannot take. I don't know where in the Constitution it says that you guys have the right to tell me what I can or cannot put into my body. I come from a standpoint of less government is better government. I'd like to see you guys just step away from this and leave us alone. Let us do what we want to do. There's never been a single case of CBD overdose. No one's gone to an emergency room because of it. No one's experienced any health issues by using CBD. And yet, you know, we have people who, let's just take a sugar. People get diabetes off of sugar. We're not controlling that. Are we going to tell people you can't take so much sugar that you're going to get diabetes? If we're going to be consistent with your intent on protecting the public, well, then let's start controlling sugar. Let's start controlling fat. Let's start controlling carbonated beverages. If we're going to be consistent, let's be consistent. Let's start controlling those things. Because there's a lot more people that show up in hospitals and emergency rooms by taking those things than have ever shown up for CBD intake. So, there you go. Thank you.
Thank you.
Would anyone else like to make comments? Come on.
My name is David Putvin, and I am a marijuana enthusiast to the fullest. It amazes me the amount of people that we can save. We are backtracking right now. We're trying to get a starting point, and I appreciate what we're trying to do here, but we need full legalization. Right now, I have family that is very sick, and they're forced into taking pills. And this is not okay. This gentleman, in his situation, this is not uncommon. People are sick, and people are suffering. And every day that we wait, people suffer every single day moving forward. Hemp is beneficial. Weed is better. We can derive CBD that is more effective. In states where weed is legal, they're using both. However, from my knowledge, medical people that can get a hold of cannabis-derived CBD, that is what they're using. They're not using the hemp CBD. However, they... Where was I going with this? Something makes me spacey here. But basically, just moving forward, I would like to encourage people to not limit others' free agency in what they choose to heal their body. In using CBD, there are benefits, but THC also has its benefits. My grandmother was on antidepressants for over a decade and was able to get off them for a year through some other recommendations, and finally was able to get a hold of cannabis CBD and was in tears and was fearful that she would not be able to get it again, because in this state it's not allowed. People are afraid of any sort of THC, and there's no reason for it. The reason why it's illegal, why is that? Was there medical research done to show why it should be illegal? Is there a reason why it should continue to be illegal? I've done a lot of speaking with a lot of different walks of life and people who are against it, and at this point it seems that people are being told what to believe on the subject. They aren't directly saying, they aren't directly against it. They say that they will wait for the medical testing, but the medical testing has already happened. So we're not against anything. We're just holding it back, and there's no reason for it. But I guess all I'm trying to say is every day that we are holding this back from people, people suffer every single day, and it's not okay. But just thought I'd bring a little bit of passion to this, and thank you, everyone.
So if you have a comment, just please come up to the mic so we can keep moving. Just a reminder, we are trying to limit this to industrial hemp. We'll have another one on CBD that starts at 11 and one that specifically on medical marijuana at 1:30.
Oh, okay. I wanted to kind of cover all a little bit. My name is Charles Babbitt, and I go by Chair. I represent UPCNC, which is Utah Patients for Cannabis and Natural Choice. We have been working quite a bit trying to get signatures for the vote. And, hemp has so many, there's so much we could do with it. I mean, Utah could really advance if they took advantage of this situation. Because, I mean, you can make homes that do not rot. Bob Vogel can investigate. Henry Ford built a bar out of it and Randolph Diesel made the engine that ran off the hemp seed, which was 95% cleaner. Our air would be a lot cleaner here if we did that. You know, I also wanted to bring up the fact that I have a relative who had lung cancer. And she started eating the cannabis. And anyway, she's cancer free. And I have a sister that had a brain tumor when she was 25 and left two little children. And the thing is, cannabis has a great potential with brain tumors. And they're right. We've been paying Israel for the last 40 years to research cannabis. And so I think we've got enough research, and since we paid for it, we ought to be able to do it. That was taxpayer dollars. And I've seen a lot of people that have been helped by this product. People that have diseases and have a hard time walking. I've got a partner that he had a hard time walking. He got a disease, I can't remember the name of it. But anyway, without it, he, the weather gets bad, he can't move. He can't even get out of bed. But with it, he can. You know, there are a lot of people that are suffering out there. We need to start thinking about the people more than the money. You know, it seems like it's always the money that we have to worry about. Where's the money going to go? Like I said in that thing that was written up, that they don't want it to get into the wrong hands. What is the wrong hand? You know, basically, each individual should have that opportunity himself to grow. It's been around for thousands of years. It wasn't illegal until 1930. I mean, why is it all of a sudden illegal there? Well, because Henry Anslinger ran out of a job after Prohibition. He needed something else to attack. So that's one of the reasons why it became illegal. Not to mention the paper industry with William Randolph Hearst, who just invested millions of dollars in forests for his paper. DuPont, that just bought some patents from the oil company so we can make plastic. And all of a sudden, hemp comes out, and now they found a way to process the patent. And it's competitive. And, you know, they had to deal with it. And it's too bad, because could you imagine what this place would look like if we had hemp growing everywhere that was cleaning our air, and we were using the fuel so our air would be 95% cleaner? You know, and we could use that here. But anyway, I hope we can start thinking about the people. We're worrying about the money and the stuff.
Did you want to speak as well?
Well, there was that. You said that you would be doing different aspects, the industrial hemp, CBD oil, and then medical marijuana later. I think I will speak for the medical marijuana part later.
Okay, great. Any other comments?
My name is Sherry Penrose. I live in Utah. Lived in Illinois most of my life, where they now allow some of the growth of hemp and the medical marijuana, which I am not going to address at this moment. But the previous gentleman, we just talked about some of the reasons why hemp was made illegal in the first place. And I think you really all need to look at that, of the historical aspects of why this was taken away from the people. And, you know, then when horses use different fuels and products for clothing and things, I think that being able to grow the hemp here in Utah is a great economic opportunity for everyone. I do not want to see any limitations on the size of acreage or anything for who can grow it. It then becomes a monopoly and control, and it's the good old boys club once again, cutting out the little guy who has ideas, who has the right, the constitutional right to economic growth for himself. And the hemp has so many good aspects to it, from food, like this lady over here was talking about, from everything. It's an amazing agriculture product. I have been working a little bit with a gentleman who they own a mountain here in Utah that was bought over 50 years ago that has a mineral, organic minerals in it that are not available anywhere else that they tested. Well, it's a humane product, and people are familiar with humane and folic acid and things that increase the production of agriculture. They've done the research on growing hemp for over 30 years. The research has been done on all these things, like we've talked about Israel. Everybody else is saying, oh, we have to do the research. No, the research has been done. The efficacy for health, for agriculture, hemp cures the soil. It aerates it more, puts things back in the soil. They used to rotate crops with the hemp because the hemp makes it healthier. And then the next few years, you can grow something else. Our soils are depleted here in the United States. Being from Illinois, where we have very rich soil and rain, which we don't have here in Utah, but this would be, growing the hemp here would be very good for the Utah soils if we can get the water rights, which I still don't understand the Western water rights that it's confusing to me. But competition is good for all of us, and that's why I want us little guys to be allowed to grow it wherever we can. Of course, legally regulated organic, that's what I want to see. Thank you very much.
Okay, any others? You can come up to both sides, so we're just ready to go.
Hello, my name is Johnny Burdock. I and my partners own a store in town called Moonlight Garden Supply. It's on State Street. We've been in Salt Lake for about 4 years now, and we sell the equipment and provide the expertise for commercial grow operations and individuals to create any type of garden that they would need to. We specialize in indoor gardening, hydroponics, aquaponics, aeroponics. And I wanted to just step up and say hello. Thank you for holding this. Appreciate the opportunity to come and share our opinions and express our interests. And primarily wanted to, first and foremost, say we are in favor of this initiative and of growing hemp in Utah. And we'd like to see wherever possible and whenever possible local businesses used for these initiatives. And that is the primary thing that we wanted to say, and say that we're in favor of moving forward with this, and thank you for your time.
Good morning. Well, I want to first off say thank you for this meeting. My name is Justin Jakes. I'm a small farm, farmer up in northern Utah. We have a small little 10-acre farm. I've raised cows, horses, that sort of thing my whole life. I'm a former U.S. Marine. I'm also a former highway patrolman. I am one of the most anti-legalization of marijuana people you will ever meet. I do not believe in it. However, I have seen the long-lasting effects of the positive that it helps people. I don't know where exactly to start. I've seen so many people bound in a wheelchair that can't eat, that are the terminally ill, that I've seen them, the CBD oils, the edibles, the THC oils, I mean, anything pill form, gummies, whatever, I've seen it help. It is a long-lasting effect that will help out Utahns. I know there's such a big division, conservative and Democrat and liberal and just everything that we have going on, but we have to start focusing on the people. We are who make up this, the United States. We are the people of the United States. This is very crucial that I don't know exactly what the rules are, if it's anything less than 100 acres or anything less than 5 acres or whatever. But I think that if we can build our farms for this, I mean, greenhouses and building and just having it ran by the state for medicinal purposes only, and not just a 6 month right to try. I'm talking children. I mean, they have more than 6 months. People in, you know, in wheelchairs, they might have more than 6 months. You know, it doesn't matter what it is. Cancer patients, we've seen it help. Or I've seen it help. I think it'd be best to let it go to a third party. Yeah, I understand. It's going to be run by the state as far as we buy the seeds from the state. And I'm all for that. I think it'd be great for this. But I appreciate you guys holding this meeting. Sorry. Y'all have a good day.
My name is Hunter Wicks, and I apologize, I already stood up. I just also like to comment on one other portion of regulation regarding interstate and intrastate commerce. I know that you don't have complete control over all interstate commerce, but for seed buying and selling for the farmers, it's important that they are able to receive and buy seeds from other states without any issues, as well as being able to sell seed to other states, as well as their hemp materials that they grow in order to be processed. If they do not choose to process locally in Utah, recommend that Utah puts in place different regulation to allow them to sell their raw materials across borders.
Good morning. My name is Sheldon Hanson. I'm a local scientist. And when I look at the discussion about the cannabis oils, the hemp, etc., yes, we do have to put restrictions and laws to enforce the protection rights of the general public from, you know, having access to a building. Now, getting to the science section of this, there's probably stacks and stacks that we could give you for information on the benefits of what the cannabis oils and the oils in general has done for people. We know this on science. You have to base your calculations, your figures on facts, which I admire. And I believe that when you set up the rules and the laws, you set up a protocol that actually says if you're growing X amount of plants and you're building in a hydroponic application, each plant has a tag number. And we're doing this in Colorado right now in a municipality, or should I say a town called Parachute. And if you know the Colorado laws, they're pretty wide open. I call it a redneck grow environment because there's some controls. Believe me, there is some, but it's not a lot. And I believe that Utah is a prime candidate to set an example of how to do these things correct. I'm sold on Utah. I was born and raised here. I'm proud of Utah. I like the ethics. I like the morals. I like the input from the church, which I found very supportive. I also seen from the AMA report that they were in objections and some in favor of some of the doctors that I know that I've contacted. They're in favor of seeing these things go forward. And it's a learning curve. I mean, you're trying to base something against it. We're going to have to educate the general public, including your staff in the governor's office, of what really works and what's safe and what's good for the benefit of the economy for the state of Utah. And to be honest, we're losing a lot of general income here that we could produce. But to jump straight into cannabis and open it up and say everybody have a permit, I don't believe that's the proper thing to do. I think we have to prove ourselves to you that we're capable of doing compliance. And if there's anything we can help you out with in Colorado from some of our facilities, feel free to visit us. We have an online application. You can see exactly what we're doing. But I'm here to help you. I'm not here to say anything derogatory against the state. I love my state. But let's do this right, and let's intervene with the right people, and let's base our decision on scientific facts, not on hearsay. That's really all I'm here to request from you folks. Thank you very much.
Any other comments? Okay. Let me just, in closing, we'll have another meeting that starts at 11 to talk about CBD specifically. But just in closing, let me explain the administrative rules process just a little bit. We are in the phase that we're gathering information from stakeholders so that you don't have a bunch of government folks just writing down what the rules should be without any of them. So we're in that phase right now. We will take a few weeks to go through that process. Then the department will draft some rules, and it will, once that happens, then you'll be able to comment specifically on the drafted rules. That process requires at least a 30-day public comment period. And so there were a few comments about, we want this available for the growing season. There is very little, if any, chance that the rules will be in place for this growing season. That 30-day comment period, if there are substantive comments and changes that need to be made, changes will be made, and then there's another 30-day comment period. And so this process that we're required to go through based on the Administrative Procedures Act does take time, but it makes the public process so that everyone has some input in what's happening. We are trying to move this along as fast as we can. These bills actually haven't even gone into effect until May 7th, so we're starting the process before some of our view that we should. But this is something that our purpose in doing this is to make industrial hemp products available to the public as quickly as we possibly can in a fair way. So if you have comments, further comments, we'd love to receive those. The best way to send them to us is at agriculture@utah.gov email address. Send those to us, and we'll make sure that those are included as we go through and try to create rules.
Question? One last question. As far as the THC levels, the 0.3, that's the law, correct? 0.3. There's mitigating factors as far as, I'm seeing a lot of farmers in Colorado, that there's a cold snap comes and it can bump the THC level in the plant. And you can wipe out entire counties in one cold snap. There are ways to mitigate that. I mean, ultimately in Colorado, the end product has to be diluted to under 0.3 every time, every day. Are you going to wipe out crops if it tests? Because they can fluctuate throughout the year based on, at least that's what my farmers are seeing.
So we're not here to comment on what's going to be in there. We're here to take public comment. However, the farm bill that allows states to have programs limits it to 0.3. Most states that have programs do have a requirement to destroy the product when industrial hemp goes above 0.3. So that's what's happening in other states. Like we've mentioned, we don't have anything drafted. We're not sure where it's going to end up here. We need to make sure that on industrial hemp, we're trying to stay with the farm bill. The McConnell bill may have some.
Can you repeat that email address that you just stated?
It's easy. It's agriculture@utah.gov. Okay. Thank you all for coming today.
May I ask, constitutionally, where do government officials have the right to dictate what we do or do not grow? Somewhere in the Constitution gives you guys that right? I'm just curious.
We're not here to debate constitutionality.
I'm not here to debate. I'm just wondering if you